This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. The evacuations of citizens and refugees from Gaza's Rafah continued on Friday as the city and nearby areas grow ever more dangerous. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
About 110,000 people at least have fled the southern Gaza city as heavy fighting between Israeli troops and Palestinian militants on the city's outskirts leaves aid crossings inaccessible. Hassim Abdin, a Rafah resident, says we have to evacuate, but we don't know where we're going to go. We can suddenly find a tank in the middle of the city and we don't know anything about it. A UN official says food and fuel supplies are growing critically low. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The chief Israeli military spokesperson, Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, said in a briefing on Thursday the Israeli armed forces had sufficient munitions for Rafah and other operations that are planned. His message came after U.S. President Joe Biden's administration said it could not support a major Rafah invasion in the absence of what it would deem a credible plan to safeguard non-combatants. Israel has said victory in the seven-month-old conflict would be impossible without taking Rafah. The UN General Assembly has voted by a wide margin to grant new quote-unquote rights and privileges to Palestine and has called on the Security Council to favorably reconsider its request to become the 194th member of the United Nations. The 193-member world body approved the Arab and Palestinian-sponsored resolution on Friday with a vote of 143-9 with 25 abstentions. This is VOA News. Hopes are fading for 44 construction workers buried for days in the rubble of a building that collapsed in South Africa. Authorities said on Friday that rescuers are now faced with the challenge of moving thousands of tons of concrete with heavy machinery to see if there are any more survivors. The death toll has risen to 9, and 21 of the 28 workers rescued from the site are in critical condition or have life-threatening injuries. The five-story building that was under construction collapsed on Monday in the city of George on South Africa's south coast. Meanwhile, election results in Chad are being disputed. Reuters correspondent David Doyle has more.
Chad's interim president, Mahamat Idriss Deby, has been declared winner of the country's May the 6th election. And that's even as his main challenger said that he had won. Suksei Mazra has called on the security forces and his supporters to oppose what he described as an attempt to steal the vote. Chad's junta has become the first of several coup-hit countries in West and Central Africa to stage a return to constitutional rule via the ballot box. Analysts had widely predicted that Deby, who seized power after rebels killed his long-ruling father in April 2021, would win. However, Mazra, an opposition leader turned prime minister, had drawn larger-than-expected crowds on the campaign trail.
Reuters correspondent David Doyle. Britain's economy grew by the most in nearly 3 years in the first quarter of 2024. It brought to an end the shallow recession. It entered in the second half of last year and beat analyst forecasts. Reuters correspondent Francis McGuire reports.
Official data said gross domestic product expanded by 0.6% in the 3 months to March. That was the strongest expansion since the fourth quarter of 2021, when it grew 1.5%. Friday's data was welcomed by Prime Minister Rishi Sunak ahead of an election. He said the economy had turned a corner. The opposition Labour Party accused Sunak of being out of touch and said it was not time for what they called a victory lap.
Reuters correspondent Francis McGuire. Georgia's Prime Minister said on Friday the government would push ahead with a bill on foreign agents despite opposition from what he cast as misled youngsters who feel resentment towards Russia. The legislation, which would require organizations receiving more than 20% of their funding from abroad to register as agents of foreign influence, has sparked street protests in Georgia by those who see it as authoritarian and Russian-inspired. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have a methodology how to operate the groups or to organize the communities so that they can collect the local savings, they can mobilize the local savings and distribute to the members so that they can undertake income-generating activities.
That was Christophe Ouattara of World Neighbors, who says his group still helps villagers in Mali and Burkina Faso. Details coming up also. Chad deploys troops after results of the May 6th presidential election was announced last night. And high-level mediation talks for South Sudan have begun in Kenya. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Chad has ordered the immediate deployment of troops to maintain peace, especially in the capital N'Djamena, after provincial results of the May 6th presidential elections, surprisingly published on Thursday night, declared transitional ruler General Mahamat Idriss Deby winner with over 61% of the votes. The main challenger, Success Masara, claimed he won with more than 73% of the votes. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé in neighboring Cameroon.
Residents in Chad's capital N'Djamena say they awoke Friday morning to the sound of heavy gunshots. 45-year-old Umar Sally, a resident of the Machaga neighborhood, spoke to VOA on Friday morning via a messaging app. Umar says the shooting may have been ordered by Chad's government to intimidate those objecting to the results of Chad's May 6th presidential elections. Public Security and Immigration Minister Mahamat Shafatin Mogui said in a release Thursday that enough police have been deployed to stop what he called the use of weapons and explosives all over Chad, but specifically in N'Djamena. According to the provisional results, Transitional President General Mahamat Deby is the official winner with 61.3% of the votes, more than the 50% needed to avoid a runoff. Members of the opposition and the public say they are surprised Orange published the figures in 3 days instead of 15 days after the voting as stated in the electoral code. Orange says it is legal to publish results within 15 days. Deby, in a late-night message, said he is now the democratically elected president of all Chadians, including opposition party leaders who lost. Deby says he is particularly delighted because he scored a resounding victory and that he is going to work immediately to fulfill his electoral promises. Deby said he will concentrate on providing jobs for unemployed youths and strengthening Chad's internal security to guarantee peace and stability. And it says more than 75% of the registered 8.2 million voters took part in the vote. Deby's main challenger, Success Masra, scored 18.53% of the vote, while Abel Pahimi Padake, the first transitional prime minister, got 7.91%. Masra had earlier declared that he won a resounding victory in the first round of voting, but that his victory was stolen by Deby. He spoke in a message broadcast on Facebook Thursday afternoon.
Tout est accompli, la victoire du peuple est éclatante.
He says Chadians voted en masse to say enough is enough to the over three-decade dictatorial rule of Chad's former president Idriss Deby Itno and his son Mahamat Idriss Deby. Masra says all his supporters and security forces should strongly oppose an attempt by Deby to steal victory from the people. Masra said all Chad civilians should calmly mobilize and demonstrate peacefully for the stolen victory to be restored. Opposition and civil society members say there is perceivable tension that may cause chaos in Chad following the publication of the results. Candidates have 5 days from the date of publication of provisional results to file complaints at the Constitutional Council, definitive results will be declared by Chad's Constitutional Council on May 21. David took power in April 2021 after the death of his father, Idris Deby Itno, who died on the front line of a war against rebels after ruling for 30 years. Mokish Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Mozambique President Filipe Nyusi, just a few hours ago in a televised address to the nation, said his army is fighting Islamist insurgents who launched a major attack on the country's northern town of Macomia this morning. The town is in Cabo Delgado, a gas-rich northern province where Islamic State's linked militants launched an insurgency in 2017. Despite a large security response, there has been a surge in attacks since January this year. Two security sources told Reuters that hundreds of fighters are believed to be involved in the latest attack. The fighting appeared to be the most serious militant attack in the area in some time. International news reports did not indicate how many casualties there have been. More than 5,000 people have been killed and hundreds of thousands forced to flee their homes in the insurgency. With a string of coups, militant attacks, and mercenary groups maintaining their grip on power in several parts of the Sahel, it's become increasingly dangerous for international aid groups to continue their work in the region. One organization that has stayed on the ground in Burkina Faso and Mali to help families and communities lift themselves out of poverty is World Neighbors. Christophe Ouattara, the group's West Africa regional director, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam, it helps villagers set up small businesses by establishing savings and credit groups.
We are experiencing a security crisis in the Sahel, and where we are implementing our program in Burkina and in Mali. But the thing is, we are working with local communities there. So we partner with associations in the communities, so that we are all the time in contact with them, and they are involved in all the activities we are doing there. So if it's possible, we go on the ground to support them, to help them implement the activities, and we are giving them support.
Are your group staffers there on the ground in Burkina Faso and Mali working with them, or are they just like talking to them by the phone and they're trying to help them otherwise, or are they there with them?
We have community facilitators on the ground. They go and teach the communities on the ground. And during our visit, we strengthen the trainings. So even though we are not there, the communities, the facilitators are there all the time with the communities. In case there is a specific training, we can hire someone, a resource person, who is qualified in that domain and give them training. If there are some technical training, we give them. For financial management, for example, all the group operates. We have a methodology how to operate the groups or to organize the communities so that they can collect the local savings, they can mobilize the local savings, and distribute to the members so that they can undertake income-generating activities.
How would you describe how these savings and credit groups work? Is each family or community group member, encouraged to give like a little part of what they earn and then you contribute like in a pool kind of group and then they use those resources all together? Or how does that work?
Okay. One group is formed by, 20 to 25 members. This is one group. When in the village, for example, there are more than 25, we split them, you form two groups. And in one group, they meet. They have a meeting per week. And during the first meeting, when we train them, we form the group, and there's the management committee of the group. Yeah, they elect a president, they elect a cashier, they elect also the key holder, because the cashier is keeping the money.
That sounds like the way you're describing it. They all agree to this president, this secretary, this cashier, treasurer, so that there's this trust that's developed between the group members.
Yeah, they trust. Yes. They trust them and they set up some rules. How much we are going to collect per week, for example? What will be the interest rates? What will be how we can manage in case someone is incapable of paying back? And all they set up all this group together, all the rules together, and then they are implemented.
That was Christopher Ouattara, West Africa Regional Director of World Neighbors. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from Ouagadougou. While both the Biden and Trump campaigns share their messaging on abortion, VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports on how the issue of reproductive rights is faring in the minds of citizens and lawmakers ahead of the 2024 presidential election.
While campaigning for reproductive rights in Pennsylvania on Wednesday, Vice President Kamala Harris, President Joe Biden's running mate, condemned abortion restrictions being enforced in several states, including Florida's ban on abortions more than 6 weeks after inception.
We have to just call it for what it is. Do you not trust women? To know what is in their own best interest? You, some legislator in some state capital, the majority of whom are not women, are in a better position to tell her what she should do? We're gonna vote.
Biden says if reelected, he will restore Roe v. Wade, a landmark Supreme Court decision that for five decades ensured a woman's right to an abortion. The presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump took to his Truth social media platform on May 5th to underscore his position on the topic. He wrote that the abortion matter is up to the states, that it will never go back to the federal government, and that the country will soon start uniting on this long contentious issue. Three of the five Supreme Court justices who voted to overturn Roe v. Wade in 2022 were appointed by Trump. Currently, 41 states ban abortions after some period, ranging from 6 to 24 weeks after gestation, with certain exceptions, according to the Guttmacher Institute. The restrictions have motivated many voters, says Jo Becker with Human Rights Watch. She was interviewed via Skype.
We've seen state ballot measures that have really turned out women voters in particular to try and enshrine abortion rights in their state.
Both the Trump and the Biden campaigns are counting on a state-by-state strategy to see whether abortion is a winning issue in the 2024 general election, says George Mason University law professor Helen Alvarez, who identifies herself as a pro-life Democrat. She was interviewed via Skype.
The degree to which the Biden campaign has made it, I think, you know, the New York Times and others are calling it their number one issue. That's a strategy decision they've made, and it could give them a couple percentage points advantage. That said, it's in deep competition with questions about the economy, inflation, and immigration.
Interviewed in North Carolina, Duke University student Amaya Clayton told VOA's Spanish service that she and her peers see reproductive rights as a big issue.
That's been a constant conversation in the U.S. since the overturning of Roe with Dobbs v. Jackson. And so I think that's something that a lot of students are very passionate about and caring about a lot.
In New Hampshire, Republican State Representative Jim Kofold says he's heard a range of concerns among voters.
There's a lot of concern that at the state level we're going to apply widespread restrictions on abortion. But that has not been the case at all this legislative cycle. I think there is a much longer conversation that we need to have as a society about, you know, how we feel about that and where we think it's appropriate to draw the line.
The debate, however, is turning into legislative battles, mostly along party lines in states like Arizona, where a near total abortion ban was recently repealed. Analysts expect the legal battles will continue at the state level, but caution it's still early to predict whether abortion will be the issue that voters will prioritize when heading to the polls in November. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. High-level mediation talks for South Sudan have been launched in Kenya, with African presidents calling for an end to a conflict that has crippled South Sudan's economy for years. The Associated Press says South Sudan's President Salva Kiir thanked his Kenyan counterpart, William Ruto, for hosting the talks. He said his government would negotiate in good faith and with an open mind. The talks are between the government and rebel opposition groups that were not part of the 2018 agreement that ended the five-year civil war that left 400,000 people dead. Ruto reiterated the need for inclusive and homegrown solutions to African issues. A study released last year suggests that dinosaurs, like the Tyrannosaurus rex, had an exceptionally high number of neurons in their brains, that these high neuron counts were directly related to intelligence, and the king of the dinosaurs had to be much more intelligent than what was assumed. VOA's Rick Pantaleo spoke with Christian Guterres, PhD, a research associate at the University of Alberta, and the author of a new study that disputes previous findings that brains in dinosaurs like T. rex were more like reptiles and were about as smart as alligators or their cousins, crocodiles. Guterres explains the discrepancy between his team's study and the one published last year.
It comes to some of the assumptions that the previous study last year made, and they have to be with one is that it has to be with which neuronal density you assume. So one thing that precisely the author of that study, Dr. Galana Hosel, has shown in mammals and in other animals is that some brains have more neurons than other in terms of density. So if you try to calculate the amount of neurons based on the brain size, which is the only thing we can kind of get from a fossil like T-Rex or other dinosaurs, then you have to assume a density. And a lot of it comes down to saying, well, had the density of a bird or the density of a reptile. And so if you use the density of a bird and assume that the T-Rex have the neuronal density of a bird, then you come up with the number of 3 billion neurons. But we think that all evidence, including the relative size of the brain and what we can infer was the shape of the brain, suggests that the brain of a T-Rex and other basal theropods was much more closer to a reptile.
We're talking about neurons. First of all, can you tell us what a neuron is? And is there actually a direct connection between the number of neurons in the brain of an animal and the measure of its intelligence?
So neurons are the basic sort of functional unit of the brain. So they're cells that have axons, so they have large connection. They form the circuits in the brain and they fire. So they have electrical signals. So they connect to each other. They talk to each other with electrical signals. And this is the base of any functioning, from activating a muscle to detecting light in the eye. All works with neurons. And so precisely Dr. Galana Hosel is the one who started this idea of counting the cells precisely in all brains. And this has been important because we have found some interesting difference. Some animals have a higher density of neurons than others. And this leads, for example, in mammals, it means that primates have much more neurons packed much more densely than like a mouse. And so because of this, and because the brain of humans is so big, it means that humans have around 90 billion neurons. And this is the most neurons than almost any other animal. The only one who has more neurons is elephant, which have like 250 billion. I think based on this is that some authors, including Dr. Galana Hosel, have really pushed to the idea that the most neurons, the better. And kind of that the size of the body doesn't matter. Now, we think that there's something there, because something that is absolutely true is that the bigger the animal, the more neurons you get. And so when you say that an animal has something like 3 billion neurons, and that's the same as a macaque, for example, or a baboon, but that baboon weighs 40 kilos versus the T-Rex that weighs 7 tons. So we think that you can't just assume that the absolute number of neurons is related to intelligence, although it is compelling perhaps that humans have almost the most neurons of anyone else.
That was Christian Guterres, PhD, a research associate at the University of Alberta, speaking with VOA's Rick Pantaleo. Prince Harry and his wife Meghan arrived in Nigeria today to champion mental health for young people affected by conflicts and to promote the Invictus Games. The prince founded the games to aid the rehabilitation of wounded and ailing service members and veterans. Our sports analyst Mokbilia Baro right here in studio. If we have time, we'll talk about the Invictus Games. But first, Mokbil will bring us up to date on the goings-on in the Basketball Africa League, the NBA playoffs, and the UEFA Championship League. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, yes.
So my first question will be, how is the Sahara Conference going in the BAL?
Yes, to be honest with you, the Sahara Conference is electric, man. Yesterday, Jackson and I, our colleague, had the pleasure of we were doing the play-by-plays for the Rivers Hoopers, the Nigerian team, versus AS Douan, the local team of Senegal. And the game came all the way down to the wire, even having a buzzer beater scored by Mike Fofana to give the edge, 56-54 victory for AS Douan. Rivers Hoopers are at the top of the standings. That was currently their very first loss, so all the teams play each other twice. Rivers Hoopers beat AS Douan the first go-around, but now they got their revenge, so they are on their way trying to make it to Kigali for the playoffs.
Electric. I'm getting a shock where I'm sitting down.
Man, I'm telling you, we couldn't even breathe. At one point, we were holding our breath for the buzzer beater, and it really lived up to its expectations.
So, Mokbil, staying with basketball, the NBA playoffs are in the second round of the playoffs. What teams are standing out to you?
To be honest with you, Yehez, this is one of the most unique playoffs in a really long time. If we think about legendary players like the LeBron James, the Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, this is the first time in, I believe, easily over a decade and some change that either LeBron James, Kevin Durant, or Steph Curry is not in or are not participating in the second round of the playoffs. All their teams are currently not in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So you have young teams that are really stepping up to the plate. You have a team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who came second place in the MVP candidates this year. Young player, very young man, about 25 years old. And he is leading at the moment. His team has the top-rated seeding in the Western Conference. So they're number one in the West. I would say they're very impressive. Their team right now is 1-1 tied with the Dallas Mavericks, who have a lot of championship pedigree with a player like Kyrie Irving. But then to me, the most impressive team by far has been the Minnesota Timberwolves. They finished third in the playoffs in the regular season, but they are leading the NBA Finals champions and the MVP last year, the Denver Nuggets, 2-0 by beating them at home. So that's my team I'm watching right now, the Minnesota Timberwolves.
NBA playoffs without LeBron and Curry, that's a little...
Times
have changed.
It's different. It's different.
And finally, the Champions League semifinals wrapped up this week. Talk to us about that briefly.
So briefly, if we can just touch on that, Real Madrid was able to beat Bayern Munich 2-1. And the game and the goals were scored in a very late fashion in extra time. Interestingly enough, there were some, there was a questionable goal that was taken away from Bayern Munich, whether or not they should have used VAR. But at the moment, we will see Real Madrid and Dortmund, Borussia Dortmund, playing June 1st for the finals.
VOA sports analyst Mokbil Baro, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.